We continued the story of the woman who had a first marriage. The husband died or divorced her, and she's supposed to wait 3 months. But instead, she got married too soon afterwards, and then has a baby, and we're a suffix whether the baby comes from the first husband or the second husband. Haya echad Yisrael v'echad Kohen. If one of the husbands was a Yisrael and the other husband was a Kohen, whichever one it was, the first husband or the second husband, there are additional complications. In this case, as we're going to see later in the Mishnah, we put on the kid, the chumras of Kohanim and Yisraelim, to make double sure, just in case he's one or the other. Nosei isha ru'uya l'kohen. When he gets married, he has to marry a woman who would be allowed to marry a kohen, since he might be a kohen. Ve'eino mitame l'mesim, and he's not allowed to be mitame to dead people because he might be a kohen. Vim nitamo, if he becomes tame, however, Eino sofeg esor boyim. He doesn't get malchus, as we saw last Mishnah, because he might not be a Kohen. Veino ochel betruma, he can't eat truma because maybe he is not a Kohen. Veim ochel eino mishalim keren b'chomesh. But if he does eat truma, then he doesn't pay back the principal and the 1/5 penalty, because maybe he is a Kohen, in which case, why would he have to pay back something he's allowed to eat? Veino cholik al hagoren, he can't go down to the threshing floor to get his portion of truma, because maybe he's not a Kohen. Umocher hatruma ve'adamim shalo. But if he has truma, he doesn't have to give it to another Kohen. Maybe he's a Kohen, so he could keep it. So what he does is instead is he sells it to Kohanim, and he can keep the money. Ve'eino cholek b'kodshei hamikdash, ve'ein nosen lois hakodshim. And as we saw in the previous Mishnah, he doesn't get a chelek from the kodshei hamikdash that a Kohen would get, but we don't give him kodshim to sacrifice, because he might be a zar, he might not be a Kohen. Ve'ein mosien es shalom yado, and we don't take that which is his out of his hands, because hamosi mechavera olav haraya. So we can't take anything away from him. Maybe he is a Kohen. So we can't change any of these, we can't change possession of any of these things. When he brings a carbon, he is pater from giving the right front hoof, the mouth, the cheeks, and the stomach to the Kohen, because maybe he's a Kohen. Uvechoro yeroa at sheyistoyev, and like in the previous Mishnah, if he has a Bechor, he doesn't have to give it to a Kohen, maybe he is a Kohen, so let it pasture until it gets a mum, and then it's his, and he can do with it what he wants. Benosna olav chumra kohanim b'chumra yisraelim, and as we said in the last Mishnah, he has the chumras of the Kohanim and Yisraelim, because he might be either one. Hayu shnehem kohanim. What if both of the potential fathers were kohanim? Now, in this case, it couldn't be that the first husband divorced the woman and then she married a kohen, because a divorcee is not allowed to marry a kohen. So in this case, it would be that they had a first husband and the husband died, and then she has a second husband. She got married too soon, and we're not certain about his paternity. So hu onen alehem. He can observe the laws of an onen, a person who lost one of his seven close relatives, the day of their death, and even Durabanan through the day of the Kavura, he has to be an Onain on the day of the death of both of the fathers, because one of them might have been his father. So he's not allowed to eat meat from a carbon. He can't perform Avoda. We know he's a Ben Kohen, so generally speaking, he could perform Avoda, but in this case, he wouldn't be able to, because we don't know which one it is, so we have to consider him in mourning. Vehem onanin olav, and if the son dies, both husbands have to keep onan laws on the day of the son's death, because each one might be his father. And again, if one had divorced him, the wife, this would be unlikely to have ever taken place. It would have been in a situation with a widow, for example. But if she was widowed, then how could the husband follow onan restrictions? So what the Gemara suggests is that the case might have been that she married the first husband al tnai, and the tnai was never fulfilled, so the marriage was annulled retroactively. But this is a funny case, because how could both fathers be alive to be an onain, and still she married a second kohen? So the Gemara offers that possibility. Hu eino matam elohem, v'heino eino matam elo. However, while he has to be an onain just in case, he can't make himself tamei by being with the body of one of these men, because a kohen only can make himself tamei for his father, and he doesn't know which one is his father. Vice versa, the other kohanim can make themselves tamei for their son, but neither one knows for sure if it's their son, so they can't become tamei for him. Hu eino yorisho son, he can't yarshin them. because if one of the fathers die, the other sons of the man can say, hey, we are vadai, he's only a suffik, we don't want to give him any chelik. Avalheim yarshin oso. But if the son dies, the two possible fathers can inherit the property of his, if there's no other definite heirs that are more likely. For example, if he had sons, then the two fathers would share the estate. Upater al makasov al kil loso shel zeh v'shel zeh. If he strikes or curses either one of those two fathers, he's pater from the capital offense, from the death penalty for striking one's father, because the point is, neither one of them is certainly his father. So it's hard to know. If he, the Tosfos Yontif from the Gemara says that if he hits them both at the same time, then he's chayev, because for sure he hit one of his fathers. And he gets to be, as Kohanim, they are divided into 24 watches, 24 Mishmaros. Each one serves in the Beis HaMikdash for 1 week at a time. He can be in both of the Mishmaros. He can volunteer with both of them, and they would have to accept him because there's no definite evidence that he's not from their Mishmar. But V'eino Cholik, he doesn't get a portion of what the Mishmar gets from the Karbanos, from the hides, because he doesn't have a definite claim to be part of that Mishmar. On the other hand, if both of the husbands came from the same Mishmar, then no matter what, he's from the Mishmar, so he gets one Chelik on that day because he has a definite claim to at least a piece of the Chelik of that Mishmar. Perek Yud Beis Mishnah Aleph, now on to the mitzvah of Chalitza, which we have talked about numerous times without ever defining. So mitzvah of Chalitza, this is the alternative for Yibum in a case of a definite Yavam and a Yavamah, or in a case where this is the only option for a Yavam because other factors played in, as we've seen throughout the Masechta. Now mitzvah Chalitza, the mitzvah of Chalitza, there's no bracha for doing it, but in fact, it is considered a mitzvah. You don't make a bracha because it's rejecting the mitzvah of Yibum, so it would seem inappropriate. The mitzvah Chalitza b'shlosha dayanim. It takes place in front of three judges. There's a three-judge panel. V'afilu shalosh dan hedyotos. Even if they are laymen, ordinary people who may not be versed in the laws of Chalitza, they at least have to know Hebrew because there are certain Hebrew psukim that are going to be read. But they don't have to be musmachim, they don't have to be knowledgeable about Chalitza, although Nidamuki Yosef says they do need to know at least the halachas of Chalitza, basically. Chalsa b'min'ol, if she performs Chalitza with a leather shoe, what happens is the Yavama has to take the shoe off the foot of the Yavam during Chalitza, and it is supposed to be a leather shoe. Now, technically, this Mishnah tells us that a leather shoe should not be the preferred shoe for Chalitza. It should be a sandal, midrabanan. The difference between a shoe and a sandal, a shoe has a hard leather sole and a soft upper covering the foot. Sandal has a hard leather sole, but no upper like the sandalim that the Israelis wear. It has kind of a low edging around the edges to keep the foot in it. A torn shoe or a torn sandal, which can't be worn normally, is not valid for Chalitza. So if part of the shoe is ripped off, then you can't use that. The Rabbanon were worried that if you use any shoe, you might use a ripped shoe, and then the Chalitza won't be good. So rather than to worry about using a shoe that might be slightly damaged, they said not to use any shoe. A sandal only has a sole, and so it's pretty clear if the sandal is damaged, so it's going to be an undamaged shoe. Seems like a long way to go, but that's what the Gemara tells us, that you use sandals instead of shoes. In times and places today where we don't use sandals, they use a shoe instead, but they use a shoe of hard leather, so it's sort of like a sandal. And all these halachas play in the chalitza. So if she was choletz with the leather shoe, chalitza sakshera, the chalitza is valid, considering that this Mishnah is suggesting to use a sandal instead. But even with a shoe, it would be valid as long as it's not damaged. Be'anpilin, if it's a cloth shoe, chalitza sapsula, then the chalitza is not a good chalitza. If you use the stocking or a foot covering made out of cloth, there's a pasuk in Yecheskel that implies that it has to have some kind of leather in it. Besandal sheyesh lo akev kasher, with a sandal that has a heel, this, according to the Rav, is referring to the part that goes around the back of the foot. The sandal itself is just the sole on the bottom, but there are straps that go around the back of the foot. If this sandal had a solid back but was missing part of the back piece, as long as the sole is okay and the foot would stay in it when you wore it, it would be fine. But by choice, you shouldn't do that. Rashi says instead that it's the heel itself. If it's missing even part of the heel, then it's a different situation. So sandal sheyesh lo akev kasher, if he has a heel, it's a kasher sandal. Ve'she'ein lo akev pasul, if it's unhealed, meaning it's damaged in some way, it's not. Min ho'arkuva ulamata, from below the knee, chalitza sakshera. Minu arkuva ulamala, from above the knee, chalitza sapsula, chalitza pasul. So the widow, the almana, the yavama, has to untie the shoe straps from the yavam's leg and remove the shoe. If he had the straps wrapped all the way up around his calf below the knee, the chalitza is valid. So it looks like one of those kind of Greek sandals. On the other hand, if it is strapped above the knee, and so it's wrapped up, for example, up around his thigh, then that would not be valid. One pshat that the Rishonim bring down is if his foot had been amputated and he only has a part of the leg, a stump that is above the knee, the chalitza is no good. The shoe can't be fastened properly. But if the piece of the stump goes below the knee, then the chalitza would be valid in this case.